I'll call this meeting to order for Wednesday, October 11th. We have a quorum, and we do have a recognition proclamation item, so Bill, would you like to take that?
I would be honored, Mr. Chair. This is in the matter of proclaiming October 2017 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month in Lincoln County. Whereas the crime of domestic violence violates an individual's privacy and dignity, security and humanity, due to systematic use of physical, emotional, sexual, psychological, and economic control and or abuse. And whereas domestic and sexual violence crosses all levels of the socioeconomic strata, race and ethnicities, ages, gender identities, sexual orientation, physical and mental abilities. Whereas the impact of domestic violence is wide-ranging, directly affecting individuals and society as a whole, here in this community, throughout the United States and the world, and whereas a coalition of organizations has emerged to directly confront this crisis, advocates and those involved with shelters and hotline services, law enforcement officials, healthcare providers, the clergy, and other concerned individuals are helping in the efforts to end domestic violence. Therefore, in recognition of the important work done by My Sister's Place, Celeste Tribal Violence Against Women Act Program, Lincoln County District Attorney, and the Lincoln County Domestic Violence Council, the members of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners do hereby proclaim the month of October 2017 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month in Lincoln County, and we urge all citizens to work with these invaluable community agencies to help alleviate this problem in our community.
Thank you. Could you please identify yourself and tell us what you'd like us to learn about this subject?
Absolutely. Good morning, everybody. My name is Lisa Norton. I'm the executive director of My Sister's Place. What a wonderful opportunity to come before you. We do this a couple of times a year, and it's always a great pleasure to kind of talk about the work, the very important work we're doing around domestic and sexual violence. So for this month, I want to highlight some of the activities over the last year, and I want to thank you, and I'll start with that. I want to thank you for your support, specifically in providing support for a full-time parole and probation officer that works in the community with domestic violence perpetrators. That was an incredible win for us, and I think has furthered our relationships within the community and strengthened a counter offender accountability. Thank you. Sorry. So we are very grateful for that. We've been able to leverage those funds that were being provided to further the work with Crossroads and offender management. So we're super happy about that. Many of you may recall last year our Awareness Month theme was around sanctuary, and we took that to heart. We were really kind of bunking our heads together trying to figure out how do we provide sanctuary, not just, you know, a safe place, but also the real problem of limited housing. So we were recently awarded a Office on Violence Against Women grant for approximately $350,000 over the next 3 years that provides rental assistance for victims of domestic and sexual violence. So we're really excited to announce that we'll be working with our partners at Community Services Consortium to be able to help that. We know it doesn't completely solve the problem. Everybody's aware of our lack of housing inventory. So we are also working with some of our other community partners to actually try and develop that housing, increase the stock available in Lincoln County. So that has consumed much of my time, but it leads also into this year's activities, which is supporting communities. It's long been our goal to provide community support and to empower change around communities. So some of the things that we're doing is we've launched a bartender bystander awareness campaign, and that's really a sexual assault thing, but it's looking at ways to prevent sexual violence in alcohol-serving establishments. We recently trained the entire alcohol-serving staff of Chinook Winds over a two-day period. It was amazing. And basically have worked within Newport, too, to work with about six different bars. So we're going to continue that community support campaign. Really, the idea behind it is basically that we all have a role, and I'll let Kim talk about that, but that we can all do things beyond not be abusive to our partners, but like look at ways that we can address those kind of things. So we also developed, in your folders, you've got our monthly, our list of activities for the month. On the back of that, though, is our rabbit response steps. The first one is to recognize it. It can happen to anyone. And that we also need to recognize that offenders are responsible for their actions. There's also the piece of acting on it. We can all take steps to reduce domestic violence, but that means includes interrupting victim blaming, addressing oppression in our own circles, and creating safe space for others, letting people know that I'm a safe person to talk to. Finally, it's believe it. We know that when people come forward with their stories, it might seem unbelievable or it might seem not congruent with what we've come to think of the perpetrator, but that's because the perpetrator works really hard to maintain a positive image so that when somebody comes forward, it's less likely that they will be believed that this has affected them. So those are just some of the tips, and in your package you will have our 2016 kind of overall stats. You will have some information on the prevalence of domestic violence. I also invite you this Saturday down to Yahats for Awake to Rhythm. This is the second time we've put it on. We're really excited. We've expanded it to a whole day of activities, and it really is just an Indigenous awareness event. We recognize that it happens more frequently sometimes in Indigenous communities or other marginalized communities, so we want to bring celebration and awareness to the beauty of the Indigenous culture as well. So you have all the information. I am going to turn...
I want to ask you a few questions.
Sure, absolutely.
I was kind of amazed. I'd never heard of this program that you just mentioned, where you work with bartenders and people who work in bars. Is that a common thing? I've never heard of it before. I think it's a great idea.
Can I brag for a minute?
Sure.
That has been my brainchild for the last 3 years, and we're finally positioned in the community where we have enough support to be able to bring that to the area alcohol serving establishments. So that there are similar programs that I learned about after I came up with the brilliant idea. Nothing's original anymore, right? But, you know, when we think about what our economy is based on, it's the tourism industry. That means we get a lot of out-of-town tourists, and sometimes the out-of-towners come to have a good time. They think Newport, Lincoln City, they're safe, small communities, and that maybe they don't have to be on guard. And what we recognize is perpetrators see that as well. So it increases their level of...
Well, let me say, I don't drink. I quit drinking when I was younger, but alcohol changes people. I still go in bars. I love to play pool and things like that. That's where the pool tables are. And it's a competitive sport. But this is a great idea because over the years I've watched and seen things that shouldn't have happened. And a lot of times alcohol is the thing that is the catalyst to make it happen. And people that are trained in this area can prevent a lot of things. My wife works in this area, and it seems like about 2 o'clock on the Friday and Saturday night is when all of a sudden the severe cases of sexual violence happen. And not saying that it's caused by alcohol, but that people are around that recognize the signs, they have a better chance of preventing it. And I've never heard of a program like this before. Congratulations. I don't know what the reaction of the bars is, but I would think that the people who work in the bars and stuff would be happy to get this kind of training.
Absolutely, and several have. And really, it is around taking the skills they already have around recognizing signs of over-intoxication and being able to look at that through a sexual violence lens. Because quite often what happens, whether the alcohol is self-administered or somebody else is buying somebody drinks, a perpetrator setting that situation up. And they're often starting from the beginning, happy to have that in-depth discussion. But it really is recognizing perpetrators' activity or their behaviors and how they're creating situations where vulnerable people may become targeted. And so I'm really proud of the program and am super looking forward to having more bars. I believe we're doing it again in November and then right before Seafood Wine Festival to try and get as many people. We had a lot of interest, but the timing was just off. But in our first training, we had, I want to say, 16 16 people from six different bars here in Newport.
So, since this is a fairly new idea and concept, and I can't speak for the alcohol industry, but it seems like this is the kind of thing. We do things after the fact, but this kind of preventive maintenance, I would think that the alcohol industry would be happy to step up and sponsor part of that if you had the connections to make something like that.
I will hope to make those connections.
Well,
I mean, and it has been a hard, honestly, it was a hard sell initially. People just weren't ready. I think they thought that we were going to come in and tell them alcohol was bad, and it's not. It's what perpetrators, it's a weapon that perpetrators use. And so being able to get the in, thankfully, in a large part, record this in the minutes, please, is pint-sized movements. If you haven't heard of them, they're a local activist organization who actually supported us in this and was able to bring the bars together in a way that was safe. And it wasn't us saying, oh, you got to do something wrong. Or you're doing something wrong. It's about, here's how we can make it all safer. And it is safer for bartenders. It's safer for patrons. And it's sending a clear message to perpetrators that we're not going to tolerate this.
It's preventive. Mm-hmm. You guys have any comment on this part of it? Because,
well, first of all, I think, as you already mentioned, Chair Thompson, the idea of dealing with the bartenders, I think, is great. And I also think the alcohol industry has been supportive with their campaign to, you know, drink responsibly. And certainly, I think this would be tangential to that theme. So, again, I think it's a good idea. I have a couple of questions. And, you know, we're coming up to the holidays, and that I think there tends to be more alcohol consumed around the holidays. Do you see cyclicality in the incidence of domestic violence around the holidays? Does it seem to increase?
My longest standing employee, and I disagree on this quite often, but I see an increase in calls to our agency. It's not, it's like right after the holidays. The cycles are usually during the summer. We get a lower volume, and I think that's because people are able to get out in, you know, in the community, maybe take the kids to the park or whatever, and use creative ways to kind of keep themselves, I hate that word, that maybe would reduce the incidences. We all know that that victims are very good at trying to reduce or eliminate instances of sexual violence, so they're able to do that. I believe it's not just around the holidays. I think when the kids go back to school, those kind of things. We're usually getting the calls right after the holidays because people are like, let's keep things quiet for the kids. We want them to have a happy Christmas or whatever it is. But then when they're, as those things pass, then we see a slight uptick in that around, okay, now is the time that I can make my move and it's safe. But yeah, I agree with you that the holidays, sometimes we have a slight uptick, but it's not on Christmas Day. It's usually right after.
Well, and I just want to add to that, that we do see an increase right before Christmas or Thanksgiving in people just simply seeking shelter, that maybe they're not domestic or sexual violence victims in that particular situation, but they may be transients in the communities, and it's starting to get really cold, and so that does, we do see a fluctuation in people who are just stuck out in really unsafe conditions in terms of the weather. And I know that's not what this is about today, but you guys are county commissioners, as you know, we don't have a large movement here that's able to capacitate the amount of people who are experiencing homelessness, and so I do want to highlight that yeah, it is an issue, and especially here where it's wet and it's very rarely dry throughout the wintertime. So
I had a personal experience where I felt a bit helpless, I guess I'll say, and briefly, the situation, I was on public transit, there was a family, and another part of it was a multiple bus or train type of environment, and there was a family behind me, and then all of a sudden I heard a gentleman to my left basically tell the father of the family, you know, you shouldn't be talking to your child that way, and it kind of caught my attention. And the next thing I knew, that father was in that gentleman's face and very intimidating, very threatening. And, you know, I had two thoughts. Number one, I certainly commended the individual for calling the father out. But, again, I kind of felt helpless because, you know, what do you do in that situation the father was very intimidating, basically said, you mind your own business, I'll do with my family what I want, that's my right, which I disagree with, but that was his position, and he was prepared to defend it. So what more can be done?
Well, and I think it's a tricky situation. I myself have been in those situations around domestic violence where I see something as a private citizen. They don't know who I am, but like as a private citizen, I was at the store not too long ago, and there was a man who was attempting to physically push somebody in a direction she did not want to go. And it appeared to be intimate partner violence. And it's always a struggle because I know sometimes when somebody steps in, that puts the victim at higher risk. So I basically just made my presence known in terms of, like, is everything okay? You know, do you need me to call somebody? And I'm addressing them both, but I'm eyeing this individual because I want them to know that somebody's watching. I mean, a perpetrator of either domestic or sexual violence, the power and control is at the root of those. I mean, those are very similar. And that the whole goal is to get away with it, to complete the act, and then to get away with it. So if you're having eyes on, you know, it's what we call more of a passive approach, but it really is letting the perpetrator know, hey, I'm standing right here watching. And I made it a point to not to come too close, but stand at my car and say, you know, do you need me to call somebody? Is everything okay here? When I really could have easily said, hey, I know what you're doing, but I didn't want the victim to be hurt. So it's that kind of thing, like letting the perpetrator know that, like, I'm watching. And you don't have to intervene because heavens knows I could have been hurt if I made the decision at that moment that I could have been hurt. But also she, as the victim, could have been hurt later on because they can say, see, look what happened. This is your fault. And be an excuse.
So we didn't mean to make you sit here this long. Bill, did you have anything to say?
But not directly related to what's been discussed so far, so I wouldn't mind hearing from our other presenter.
Yeah, please. Sorry about the long conversation.
We can talk all day.
I can listen to her talk all day. my name's Kim Lane, and I'm the care program coordinator out at the Tribe. We're a domestic and sexual violence advocacy agency, and we partner with my sister's place. They're kind enough to allow us on their crisis line and to support us in our endeavors. We are a smaller program. And, of course, being a tribal community, I'm sure you may be well aware since you live in the area that community is intensely important to our tribe. We're always having events. It's always about that circle, about supporting each other is the very nature of what we are, a tribe. We believe that what affects one affects us all. But that's true for every community. If every community thought that way, imagine the difference we could make. And Lisa was talking about earlier, we all have that ability as a community member to show our support through simply making our presence known, but also in the way of being careful how we speak, but also how we categorize things. I can't tell you how many times I've been giving out flyers for events and someone's told me, I'll give this to my wife. Perpetrators can be men or women, but we really need men to be present in this fight against this, because at the end of the day, the statistics do show that there is oftentimes more likely a woman to be victimized than a man. And so what does that say? That says that oftentimes it could be a perpetrator that's a man more often than not. As men, if you set an example, and I'm saying this because you're all men right here, for your counterparts, for those who share your gender identity, you're really setting that community standard. And, you know, we believe that in the tribe, which is why we're excited that October 20th, you know, football's big in Siletz. We're going to be having our homecoming game, and the football players are going to be wearing purple socks, and we're going to be giving out flyers, the chapsticks that were placed on your desk, sanitizer, because we think it's important not just to educate our adults, but this is a young group of men who are going to be going out in the world. They're going to be having intimate relationships, and they need to be educated on it. And we've said for a long time that we have a prevention group for girls, but we're only talking to half of the population. So we're really excited to be expanding that. And so, you know, in honor of the community, healing is, we're having trouble talking today, both of us. Community is the foundation of healing, which is the theme from the Oregon Coalition, that we really hope to start doing that via those messages and those community events. So afterwards, we are going to be having a Take Back the Night Walk. Everyone's going to be wearing glow-in-the-dark clothing, not because domestic or sexual violence tends to happen at night, but because we really want to be that light for survivors, because the way we carry ourselves, the way we talk to each other, the way we set examples for people of our shared identities or different identities, that's so important. And so that's really our message this month, and we're really happy to be moving forward on those ventures with the care, with the MSP program.
Great. Can't resist with the timing. Any thoughts or takeaways? It's a national news story, but once again, we've got a prominent man, an entertainment mogul, who apparently we now know has gotten away with sexual assault and sexual violence for decades using his influence, buy-offs, and it's now finally coming to the surface. And unfortunately seeing a prominent women's clothing designer engaging in victim blaming and shaming. And certainly not the first time this has been in the news nationally. The prominent chief executive of a television news network, a certain beloved comedian over decades. Just any thoughts, any takeaways that we can apply in our own lives right here in Lincoln County to cases like this?
I would say that this is a great opportunity for conversation with people. I mean, we can't prevent what happened there, but too often we know that that veil of silence prevents people from coming forward. They think they're the only one it's happened to. We know that there had to be people who knew about it and were complicit in that, and calling that out is important, but also using that as an opportunity to talk with people to say, you know, my thought or theory is act as if it's already been done. So we think about seatbelt laws. You know, you wouldn't dream of jumping in a car without putting on a seatbelt, right? But that wasn't the case when I was a kid. I remember my mom going, "It's my right," and all of this stuff. Now she won't even start the car until her grandchildren are buckled up. And I think if you act as if it's already been done, you act as if this is not appropriate, and you're proactive in that. Like, can you believe? Now I noticed you didn't mention any of the names. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure why. I just thought.
But that we are taught that this is something we don't talk about openly, so then it continues. Now, I probably would have chosen the same, but I mean, I think it's an opportunity to further those conversations, to be proactive, to talk with people in your circles around, you know, this person got away with it, and that's not okay. And it's never okay to victim blame. Yeah. And, you know, we give you tools every year. Bill, you've been along, all of you have been longtime supporters. But it's risky to take those, but also actively interrupt oppression. I mean, how many of us have been heard an off-color joke, and we're uncomfortable with, like,
but
we just go, And so being able to say, you know, what's funny about that? What's funny about somebody putting their hands on another individual for power and control? You may not be the most liked at the party, but at least, and you probably aren't even talking to that particular person, but you might be talking to the 6 or 10 people that are standing around you who then go, oh, Bill Hall's a safe person. You know? Believe. Be that safe person. Create that safe space. And then be prepared when somebody does come to you and say, this has happened to me. Call My Sister's Place, call the CARE program. Those are ways. Actively have those conversations. I call it staring into the curb. It's one of my favorite things to do because that's where the learning comes. That's where, you know, some people you'll never change minds. But that would be my long answer.
Thank you.
I have something to say.
Sure. Please.
Imagine how that would have looked if someone, I won't say it, I know that's making you nervous, if someone had thrown politeness out the door and thrown the possible consequences for themselves and just said, wow, that was really inappropriate of you to behave. And so I encourage us all, like Lisa said, not just to lean into it, but stop allowing society's rules to work for the perpetrators. And that's something that she talked about all last week, and I was just so inspired for. But I think it's also important for us to stop and look at, this wasn't a man and a wife beater with a woman in a trailer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a perfect example of how those stereotypes and the way we speak about these issues, how we're creating that narrative and preventing people from seeing maybe the reality that they're a victim, or that maybe that man that's really well in the community and he does all these great things, maybe he's not so great. And so allowing that to disenchant us from the world. So.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good information.
Ready for a motion, please. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would be happy to move that we proclaim October 2017 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month in Lincoln County.
I'm happy to second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. And thank you for original thinking on part of this. I'm happy to see that program and wish you the best of luck to expand it.
Thank you.
Yep.
Chair, take a group photo on this one. We don't do it all the time, but I think it would be good if you guys wouldn't mind coming up and having this one.
Well, I don't know. He's wearing the right color tie.
One more. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Young Stotts, other penises. I saw when Ailes was in trouble, it was all, oh, it's all a political vendetta. And now, you know, with Weinstein, it's all, oh, he's a liberal darling. Doesn't matter.
That's the narrative.
Yeah.
We can wait later.
Yeah. It's not ethnic, it's not racial, it's not political.
Okay.
It's everywhere, unfortunately.
We move down to consent calendar item.
I don't think he's restarted the date yet.
Oh. Yes. Sorry, I wasn't looking at him.
Yeah.
We'll move down to the adoption of the consent calendar. Is there anything on the consent calendar you'd like to change or make comment on?
I'll move for approval of the consent calendar.
And I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. We moved clear down to discussion and information items. Notification of property owners for encroachment of Newport Airport flight path.
Commissioners, if I might, we have a couple of representatives from the City of Newport here to talk about a project they're undertaking at the behest of the City Council involving the Newport Airport. And you've got a memorandum from City Manager Spencer Neeble that identifies it. I've tried to prepare just a quick little vicinity map, and they'll talk a little bit about the kind of the scope, the areas involved in this particular project, and describe what's going on. Go ahead, introduce yourselves.
All right, I'm Lance Vanderbeck, City of Newport Airport Director.
I'm Melissa Roman, Engineering Tech 2 with the City.
So what's going on is when we redid our runway back in 2013, we did a survey of possible obstacles off of either ends of runways that might be penetrating into what's called the departure and approach zone. That survey came back, and there's roughly about 165 penetrations into that zone that the FAA, with our grant assurances and regulations, you know, we're required to keep that clear. So we've started the process. We're going to be starting the process with just some reach out for property owners, because the biggest impact is going to be on the south side of the airport. And the size of the area is massive, and I'll let Melissa, the project manager, talk to you a little bit more about the area that we're looking at.
Okay, you have your maps. You'll see that X, which is the airport, and then the runway that's running north-south. The bottom of that runway, the center line, if you go 500 feet east and 500 feet west, that's and 200 feet south, that's the starting point. And then it wedges out at a straight line off the center line for 10,000 feet. So by the time you get out to the 10,000 foot mark, you're at about 1,700 to 2,000 feet wide. And that is the departure and the approach surface are both in that wedge. And so what we will be doing is contacting everybody inside that wedge and in the places around it and notifying them of the project. And so we wanted to let you guys know that it was coming, because this is largely county area, and we figure that people would be calling you, so we wanted to make sure that you had the telephone number of who to send them to. That would be me. And I think you have in the memo that Spencer gave you, I think you have my contact information.
We do.
Okay. So what we will be doing is, this is a multi-year project, so nothing's going to happen tomorrow or next week, but that also means that it's going to be at least 3 years as a process, because we have a lot of people we need to talk to, and we need to negotiate easements with these people for the trees that are on property, that private property, so we need to get an easement to cut them down, top them, or whatever it is we negotiate with the property owners. And so it's going to take a while to get to everybody. There are two types of easements we're going to be doing. The one that we know we have to remove a tree, and then ones where we're going to be working into the future in terms of maintenance, where there might not be a tree right now that has to be removed, but we want to make sure that we cover so that we don't have to start this process all over again in the future, because it was never done. And so the trees were allowed to go, the surfaces weren't maintained, and so basically now we have to start from the beginning.
So I just took it, and I think I've got it right. We're a little over 3 miles wide. Is that correct? 10,000 feet figures out to be...
10,000 feet is almost 2 miles long.
It's 2 miles long, right?
Yeah, 2 miles long.
Okay, and then, you're right. I didn't divide Okay. So I know where I made my mistake. I was figuring through a half mile is 880 yards and taking feet to yards. And okay, I made a mistake. Apologize. 2 miles long. Then the width on that, because it's a...
Because it's trapezoid.
Yeah. So what's the trapezoid width? I'm trying to...
So at the runway, it's 500 feet east and 500 feet west. So it's 1,000 feet with the center line in the middle. And then the 10,000 feet goes right off of center line. And the sides go off at an angle. And so by the time you get to 10,000 feet, you're at a width. You've gone from 1,000 feet to about 1,700 to 2,000.
Yeah, that's a big chunk of property you got to work with.
Yes. It's a multi-year.
Now, is that a standard by the Aeronautics Commission that we're supposed to reach? I mean, if you say we haven't done it, why haven't we done it sooner?
Well, that's actually a good question on why it hasn't been done sooner. And really, it's just our not doing our due diligence with having projects like that, because those are in every AIP project, that those grant assurances that we are maintaining those surfaces. So we are starting to do our due diligence. We should have done this process a long time ago. Unfortunately, we haven't gotten around to it until now.
So
Also, we don't often do a survey, and without a survey, we don't necessarily know what's happening to the surfaces. And so when we were required by the FAA to do an airport geographical information survey, we did that, and that's where it showed us where all the objects are in the surfaces.
So a lot of these trees are just going to need topped, I assume.
Well, that gets to be problematic because depending upon the species of tree, if you top it, it opens it up to disease. And
well, yeah, with alder, but with some of the others.
Yeah, so, you know, people might want to top it, but it becomes problematic because if we top it and the tree dies, we're going to have a lot of unhappy people because they've got this really big tree in their front yard and we won't be able to afford to go back and get it.
Well, if I remember that terrain down there, there's some quite a few yards, but it's not like a dense housing development.
There, at the beginning, on the west side of the runway, you have Pruner Subdivision. Now, most of that subdivision is outside of the surfaces, but along the east side of that subdivision, that strip of properties right there is inside the surface. So those trees, those property owners will be the ones in that area that will be contracting for easements and negotiating easements for that, because they're closer to the airport where the trapezoid is narrower and they have trees. And these are large trees. I mean, some of them are like 150 feet.
So I can't see this very well, but I assume that Steel Creek Road, that's the main drive that we're talking about.
98th Street.
98th Street.
Yes. 98th Street and 98th Court. We aren't really doing much on 98th Court, but that is the center pretty much of the properties that we will need to be contacting, because the largest group of trees is in that area. And of course, and I want to stress, we're doing this as a safety thing. It's we don't really want to do this.
I want you to do it if I fly an airplane out of here.
Yeah, it's a safety thing to make sure that the planes, they have to come in on certain glide slopes, they have to come in at certain angles, and they have to come in and go over the trees and come down, and it messes with their approach and their departure. So that's why it's a mandate from the FAA.
Any comments?
Would like, I guess, further clarification of the size of the trapezoid.
Commissioner, there is actually, we took one of the maps, and Melissa helped us by and I'm sorry. It's
referencing the scale, I think
it's pretty big when you
get
that
the
lined out. That's what I was trying to do off of the...
Can you sort of see that there?
Okay.
Below the 104, you know, is the southern line. You can see up, spreading way out there.
And it crosses...
So, excuse me. Go ahead.
It crosses different types of property. It crosses, for instance, residential, and then we have the area that is zoned as a destination resort, and then it has they're in forestry areas. So it's going to affect a lot of different types of public
and we want to make sure that we take all of that into consideration as we do the project.
I was just going to clarify for benefit of the people who may be viewing this or listening later. It looks like this trapezoid goes as far south as approximately 123rd.
Don't follow the highlighter too close. You see where that line goes across. Theal Creek, and then you've got the 104, and that line that goes straight across.
Yeah.
That line that goes straight across is pretty much the edge.
Okay, so close to 123rd.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I just think that helps for you. I'm a visual guy, but looking at the map, it's nice to have some numbers.
Well, on November 2nd, we will be having an open house for all the property owners and anybody who's interested to be there, and we will have more maps. It can get a little overwhelming. It can get a little technical. So we try to keep the maps down, but we will have maps because there are a lot of terminology, and we want to make sure that we're talking to people in terms they can understand.
Yeah, if I might offer a suggestion, I think a map that's maybe a little more clear.
This is my map. I did it because I figured you guys wanted to know.
We're
looking at.
Yeah. Like I said, it's a suggestion, but no, I think a map that lays out the parameters.
There'll be one.
Would be helpful.
Yeah, and we have one that lays out the trapezoid and lists the lots, the tax lots. And so they'll be able to look at it and look and know where their tax lot is and be able to see. It's not quite an aerial, it's more of a CAD drawing, so it's clearer.
And again, this is something that's required by the FAA.
Yes.
I just wanted to ask the last comment. Right. We do have a project timeline. This packet, which is the approved action plan for the project, will be posted on the website so anybody can have access to this information. And
I just wanted to ask you a question, but let you finish. I didn't need to know.
Oh, no. So we have tried to plan it, start the planning process as very methodically as we can, so we're not doing this haphazardly. We are aware of the inconvenience and the social implications of what we're doing.
Wayne, I was wondering if we could come up with some kind of plan just to make sure, not only our office, but planning, public works, and whatever departments who are likely to get inquiries from the public, that they get the proper information on where to refer public calls about this.
Actually, I was thinking about that. I think most of the calls will probably come into us, but they will go to planning too.
Sure.
So we'll make sure that we have the contact.
Public works,
make sure that the information's there. Where to make the reference.
Okay. So I have a question. I understand, I thought Thiel Creek, that low spot in there was going to be bigger, but it sounds like it's way bigger than the low area of Thiel Creek. But on the northeast southwest runway, to the northeast side, I see you've got some cleared areas in there, but there's some high ridges there above King Slough. Is there very much trees?
There are a few trees on the northeast. It largely impacts one property owner, and we already have an easement for that. Now, we will be contacting that property owner again because the easement is quite old, and we want to make sure that, they know what we're doing, and we go over the easements with them again and talk to them. So there are some on the northeast, not nearly as many as there are on the south.
If it's very wide, there's some new owners in that area too, when you start to do some checking. So.
And that's a different classification of runway, so the departure and approach surfaces is a different shape.
That isn't used very much.
No, that's just the visual approach runway for those nice calm days where the wind is blowing that direction for pilots to land and take off. So it's not our full instrument ILS as the 1634.
Right.
And that's where, you're shooting approach to come in. If the wind is not blowing correctly, you have to circle the land on 3-4. That's when those approach surfaces play a critical component because you're flying in a plane at 120 knots and you can't see anything in front of you until you break out. So that's why the FAA requires those areas to be cleared because there could be a tree that you don't know is there because you can't see it.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
Good information. Good information. Glad to help how we can. It sounds like something that we should have done sooner.
Yes.
Yeah, we should have. But now we will.
Yeah. Well, you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
we will get more air traffic.
We've seen a good increase in air traffic recently.
Good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, we move down to reports, it looks like. And do we have any commissioners' reports?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just something I'd like to share that was shared with me by Sheriff Landers, a citizen communication through his website. Recently, the sheriff and I and our stepping up consultant, Steve Sparks, authored an article on newslincolncounty.com, kind of giving a comprehensive look at the Stepping Up initiative. And this was a very interesting note from a citizen offering to volunteer. We've now reached out to her, but I'd like to share just part of her message in this. I've heard some variation on this time and time again, and I think why we're not only getting community partner and service provider interest, but public interest as well. I have tried for years to get help for my son. We are a retired military family. My son is in prison, and my great niece's mother died because they could not get help for their mental illnesses. I know that the crime rate would go down significantly if we could help people instead of putting them in jail. People's lives are being ruined due to the lack of proper mental health care. So we have reached out to this local resident and hopefully going to get her involved in these efforts as well. It's sad to hear stories like that, but also heartening that people are seeing that we may be on the path towards some solutions.
Good. I have no reports.
No reports. I'll pass. So we had constituent input. The only person in the audience.
He's not a candidate
from the road department. Do you want to testify, or are you here for
something? Actually, I was just here for the airport report because I had talked to Melissa about 3 months ago about.
Well, come on up here and sit down and talk about it, because you're a person who has to deal with the transportation system in the county.
Rory Kenyon, Public Works Director. And what I was saying was Melissa came in and visited me about 3 months ago, and Field Creek 98th Street is county road. That subdivision, the streets within the subdivision are public roads. And she was inquiring about right-of-ways and how she was going to work with the county. And I informed her that public roads and most of our county road system has an underlying ownership. So the adjacent property owners actually own basically the vegetation. And so anything of any market value, anything that you can get value out of, actually belongs to the adjacent property owner. So I told her I wasn't really able to help her there, that she still had to deal with each individual property owner. If one of the trees existed between the road and their house, it was property of that owner. And then we did talk about she was talking about, removal of some of these trees that happen to be in somebody's backyard, beside their house, kind of a highly technical operation, and that they were probably going to be bringing in large cranes, and about how, setting them up in the roadway, what they were allowed to do, what they weren't allowed to do, flag traffic control, that kind of stuff. And so we basically covered a lot of that kind of stuff early on. And so I just thought, I seen it was on the agenda, I thought, well, if something came up, I would be here to try to.
Who do people contact? Because a lot of these people have never dealt with this issue and don't know their rights. Who do they contact? The planning department?
You? For tree removal?
Yeah.
Usually, if it's within the right-of-way, whether it be a public right-of-way or the county road right-of-way, they need to contact us, the road department, Public Works.
Okay. And does, where is the rights of the individual on this? Does the FAA's authority trump the rights of the individual?
That's a good question.
Here's a we're not going to go there. That's for the city to decide. But she did indicate that what they're going to be doing is negotiating these particular easements, which would include negotiating, what happens to a specific individual encroachments, the individual trees. They will have a contractor come out and do that particular work for them. So they'll be negotiating those with the property owners.
Okay. Right. And I do know that when, away from the airport, away from this clear zone, when we, Lincoln County, have an issue with a tree along one of the right-of-ways, the only time that we have the absolute right to remove the tree is when it endangers the traveling public. If it is basically labeled as a danger tree and there's imminent danger, we have the right basically to remove it, even against, you know, the wishes of the property owner. If it's just there, then basically it's more of a negotiation and that kind of a thing. So, but I don't know. FAA, not the FFA. But the FAA, I don't know, maybe like the railroad. You know, it's kind of one of those agencies that do have more rights than what other agencies do.
And luckily, if you get questions on that, refer them to the city network.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, anything else?
Nope.
Our next meeting is Wednesday, October 18th, here in the Board of Commissioners room at 9:30.
Mr. Chair, could I just mention that I will not be at that meeting. I'm attending the annual conference of Neighborhood Partnerships, a state nonprofit that I serve on the board of. Neighborhood Partnerships does a lot of work around homelessness, affordable housing, and also asset building for low-income people. Like, for instance, we manage the individual development account program for the state of Oregon, where people who want to save to start business, for education, things like that, if they are qualified for the program and they put money into a savings account, the state matches it on a 3-to-1 ratio up to a certain amount of money. So that organization is doing a lot of good to help people help themselves. I'm proud to be a part of it. And I'm sorry to miss next week's meeting, but looking forward to this conference.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good. With that, meeting adjourned.